And SVS Fishing is back for another week, guys. We're coming down off of the F3T. Three of us have attended it last night. It was a good show, man.
It was.
Chuck really Reagan, they started to show off with his little video. It was pretty sick. I dug it. So that's why we came in with him tonight. We have a guest tonight, Chris Adams from Ammo Fly. He's sick. You guys want to check out some birds?
He's got some sick flies.
Oh, some fly,
his flies are
some fly fishing south of the equator
today too on a cliff box. That'd be something to talk to him about.
Yeah, he's got a couple different ones on here painted on boxes.
Yep.
But tonight's show is brought to you by Predator Fly Gear.
PredatorFlyGear.com.
You can find that at PredatorFlyGear.com and Alsdorf Genetic. So anyone who listens to last week's show, check out Joel. He's got the goods, man.
Yeah. Last night we attended that in Lombardo. He was using all of his feathers.
Yeah.
Looked great. Capes look awesome.
And we're welcoming on a new sponsor tonight, Eric's Hooks. So if you guys want to stick something, some pointy ass hooks, Eric's is the deal.
Sneaky sharp.
So
that's called Dreyas. Like, just bury one.
Oh, that was disgusting.
And it seems like everybody who's tying now is. Is really moving to their
Eric's
hooks.
Is making their presence known.
Absolutely.
So, if you guys need some hooks, go check out Eric's. So.
That's a big thing. There are so many hooks out there. It's unreal.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, it's big hooks.
Nice part with them, too, is they set out to build a hook that's good and obtainable. Because how many of them out there are really good and they're just hard to get?
Yeah.
These ones are available. Consistent quality. Everybody you talk to loves them. And they're sharp.
Yeah. I can't wait to start tying on this platform.
Mm-hmm.
So, on that note, we got to see some sick flies last night. Well, we were at the F3T. Afterwards, we all went to a bar and hung out, and they had a giveaway. And our good friend Pat Lombardo from Bent Barb Fly Co. was doing a little tying demo.
Machine.
Just a machine.
Oh my
gosh. We were there 2 hours maybe, and he tied up, I think, 8 Joe Goodspeed style flies. It was disgusting.
I mean, man. Yeah.
Every one of them just better than the next.
That's crazy.
I mean, and the as quick as he is with that goop, you know, the shoe goop, the way he does the heads, and he's just, man, running through it, you know, running over him, puts his finger a little bit, rolls it, man, it was, and he was putting them out.
That's so mad.
Like a machine.
There was another kid there doing a tying demo also, but I don't know his name. Can't shout him out because I didn't catch his name.
He was tying
Dom,
smaller
Dom
bugs.
Dom didn't tie at all?
Dom did not tie at all. He was being a social butterfly.
He done, he did most of the running of the thing.
Yeah, he was running around.
Being a good host.
Yeah. Yes.
That's cool.
So, big shout out to you, the Seneca chapter.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good show last night.
Yeah. Erie chapter. I don't know. The one I went to, the TU chapter up there, that put on, I forget who it actually is.
I'm not sure.
But yeah, their chapter up there, but they did a good job.
So, the F3T, is it the same whether you go to Denver or Calgary's Port or New Jersey?
The show itself doesn't change.
Okay. So they do the same intermission, the same thing?
Oh, that I don't know. That's probably dependent on each place and who puts it on.
Now, did you have an intermission at yours?
Yeah, we had intermission. Then they did, like, the prizes. Mm-hmm. See, we had an actual...
That's how ours was set up.
You purchased tickets. You guys were all through your tickets themselves. Mm-hmm. So they had, like, a fundraiser to purchase tickets. And there was a couple rods and odd and end things, Costa sunglasses.
Mm-hmm. My dad won a spool or a couple spools of Tippett. He went up, got it, came back, said, "What the hell am I going to do with this?" I said, "You're going to put that in my pocket."
I do. Yeah, my buddy there, he won the Costas. That was a good win.
Too. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it is.
580 Gs, too. They're nice.
Mm-hmm. They had a Yeti bucket
yep.
up at the Calder's Port. I said, "You guys know I'm going to win another goddamn Yeti bucket."
No.
I didn't.
You did?
No, I didn't.
Some little kid won it.
Some little kid won it. That's pretty cool.
Was there quite a bit of youth at the one that you went to?
No.
No?
A lot of older people.
There was a few guys that brought in their kids, a few families even.
Yeah, there were a couple flocks of children.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was. They did like a giveaway for, I think it was children under 15 or 16, and there was only three of them. Then they had a couple like 16, 17-year-olds, and then up from there.
Yeah, there were probably 10 or 12 kids under 16 years old last night. So it was a good turnout. And if anyone was still going on, anyone wants to go, it's well worth whatever you have to drive to get there.
Yeah. When is the Erie one?
It was last night. Right.
What you go? I thought you went to.
I went to Calder's Port.
Yeah.
Mark went to Erie.
Erie. Okay.
Jay went to Calder's Port.
Yeah, right. As well. Yeah, I was there.
I didn't know they were the same night.
I think Pittsburgh's is either last night or tonight.
I'm pretty sure there's just today.
So.
I thought they were all different times.
You guys got new lids from there.
Yeah, we did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we got me and Chad won a couple
new Jay hats. Won the F3T hat.
Yeah, it's a nice cost of hat.
I want a really Yeti nice. Hat.
I wish yours would say bucket instead of cooler. Yeti bucket.
You can make that happen.
I can make it happen.
That is a nice hat.
Yeah.
I'll just get a piece of, I'll really white trash it up and get a piece of white duct tape and write buckets on it. I will do that. That's going to be good. So, hey, on that note.
They had a couple giveaways at the little after party, which, I mean, we can even get into a little after, but, no, I got a big head last night, man. Somebody compared, at least, mistaked one of my flies for one of Dom's flies, and, man, I haven't been able to walk through rooms since then. I had a hard time sleeping last night in the camper because my head was so big I couldn't roll around. Man, you should have seen me light up, man. Smile now. I could have smiling ear to ear.
It was one of Dom's buddies
that said that. Yeah, that buys his flies on a regular basis, so it made me feel good. At least my flies look okay.
Yeah. They're okay.
Yeah, they're all right. Most of them are all right.
So, yeah, and if anyone has a chance and has the ability to donate some flies to this, a little bit goes a long way.
Yeah. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, some older guy won mine. Good luck with that. I'm going to try it for Pike. Okay. Cool.
Good deal.
Yeah. Cool.
So, that was cool.
We've been just, straight rain every day here.
Yeah.
Blown. Nope. Can't get out the fish or anything.
I caught a fish 2 days ago.
On the pond?
Yeah. Actually, I caught a couple. Some bluegills.
I think they finally closed some gates at the lake.
They did.
Because Pittsburgh's underwater. Water's
up big time. Yeah, I drove down today and water's... It's almost back up to full. It was 7 foot about a week ago, and it's maybe a foot and a half, two off.
Yeah.
It's close.
When Jay and I drove...
chocolate.
When Jay and I drove past the river today, it was out of the banks down here in West Millsides.
Going up 79, Arthur's still 3/4 of the way froze.
Really?
Oh, yeah. All the bays are almost solid, but 20 foot off the bank.
Holy cow.
Yep. Spango, we drove over it today. I don't know if you drove over it later.
I went down today, yeah. It's clear.
Wide open.
Yeah.
Just muddy as all get out.
Yeah, yep. Muddy.
It looks like that puddle Slater's son was romping around in earlier.
Asshole. It's not Chad.
Your spawn.
Yeah. Eat all this oil. Yeah.
Apples don't fall far.
Nah, I listen some days.
So, on that note, you want to take a break? Come back, little Chris Adams?
Yeah, get him on the phone here and get ready to roll.
Heck yeah.
Sounds good.
And we're back with Chris Adams from Ammo Fly. So, hey, Chris, you want to introduce yourself a little bit to anyone that hasn't heard of you, or hasn't checked out your Instagram, or doesn't know who you are?
Yeah, my name is Chris Adams. I'm from Australia. I'm a fly fisher. and I tie flies.
Cool. What what's your main targeted species down that way?
Freshwater natives. We got Australian bass here, barramundi, Murray cod. Those are the big ones. Saratoga is another one, which is type of arowana, if you like. Type of arowana, pretty distant relative, I'd imagine. But they're the main ones, I suppose. We also, I also tie for saltwater as well. I sort of started saltwater fly fishing, so it's not hard for me to sort of drift back into that. But mainly freshwater natives. I don't tie flies for trout.
And saltwater wise,
that clear.
Saltwater wise, what are you tying for? Like kingfish or?
We got a pretty good tuna fishery out the front from my place. It's literally a 30-second boat ride to find, just scores of bluefin and false albacore and stuff like that, just frothing pretty hard. So that's something that I like to tie a lot of. We got a pretty good flats fishery, not far from where I live, an hour, a place called Harvey Bay. We get marlin up in about, waist deep water, things like that, golden trevally, permit, stuff like that. But, I don't tie a lot of that stuff. That market's pretty saturated over here with guys doing stuff like that. So, I try to sort of stay unique and do things for, the freshwater natives, I guess. That's what I like to do. I don't like to wash me boat or me gear.
So stay unique. You mean like tying birds?
Yeah. Tying birds. That's for mainly bass, cod, things like that over here.
Do the cod explode on them, or do the cod is more top water game?
That's like chucking a brick in the water. Those things are pretty hectic, eh? They're very aggressive fish. Can be. They can sit there with their mouth shut for a while as well, but when they're on, that's for sure.
So what was it that got you onto the deer hair side of things that, you perfected that in?
I've always done it. I've done, I've tied Dahlberg dive for as long as I can remember. But I was definitely inspired by what I saw Pat do. I sort of stumbled across Pat before I had social media. I know he's been on social media for a while, but I found his website. I was looking for quality deer hair, which we can't get very much of it in Australia. And I just saw the stuff he did, saw his techniques, saw that fugly packer, and I just sort of clicked, It's I always considered people who did good deer hair to be good tires. They're pretty flies. They look good. They work. They work well, So just something I sat down and just persisted with.
So I know on the bucktail side of things, it could be hard for you to get in Australia. Can you substitute any of your local deer for the belly hair you need to make your poppers and all the deer hair work for birds and stuff?
Yeah, we can. I have done. We get... the guys in Australia listening are going to be cringing to this, but, I'm pretty sure there's about three. I'm not a hunter, I'm a fisherman, so it's, I'm pretty sure there's about three or four deer in Australia here. It's probably more. It might be less. But they're all feral, so the season's open. There's no season. You just kill at random, And they don't yield much hair. It's pretty hot over here. It gets cold. We get snow. That's a fair way away from me, but... the deer that are around us here, they're pretty sparse, for example, like a patch of deer hair I might get from the States, I'll get three or four bugs out of one patch, roughly. But in these ones in Australia, like a red deer, for example, I'll get one out of a same-size patch.
Yeah, it makes it a little more difficult.
Yeah, it's tough when tying commercially. It's a shitty yield, that's for sure.
So what else in your area do you use the supplement for on your flies?
Not much, there's not much in Australia as far as natural materials that are suitable for the type of flies I'm tying. Most of the flies I'm tying are being developed in places where there's a good source, where you guys are. And the flies that I try to copy, we'll try to put my own spin on, but basically replicating other people's patterns. I'd love to do it with Australian materials. It's, it'd be great, but it's just not possible, in a lot of circumstances.
You can't spin any dang kangaroo or wallaby that doesn't spin?
It's not coarse enough. It's just, dudes do. There's patterns. I know the trout guys have got patterns with kangaroo fur and stuff like that, but nah, nothing that I do. Maybe rabbit or something like that, a bit of zonker or something like that, but no one's really into... you know, processing that stuff here.
I'm a little more serious. How does the DK Dancer, how does that run? Does that run hook up? And what goes into tying one of those? Those are amazing looking flies.
Yeah. So the DK Dancer was developed by two Australian anglers, Lionel Kemp and Paul Dolan. It was made for a species we've got over here called barramundi. Essentially, it rides hook down. You fish it off a sinking line, like a booby fly, like the fly rides higher than the fly line. They're targeting fish that are suspended in, you know, 14, 15 feet of water. So you're using a fast sink line, something that's 6 inches per second, say. Striper 4, that's Striper 4 from SA that came out a while ago. It was a good line for that stuff, and there's, you know, new lines that do it as well. But essentially, the way that fly gets its action is the toe point is behind the head of the fly, as you can probably see. So what that does is, as the water acts on the fly, it creates an erratic action as the fly line pulls it down. So it's quite like a bit of a suspending fly, if you like, to a degree, but it's just targeting, you know, fish that are laid up, basically.
Gotcha. So you start dabbling in the new Buford style. How's that been for you?
Oh, man, that fly is pretty epic. I love that fly. That's pretty cool. I've been testing it out. I haven't sold any commercially yet. I really want to get the hang of it. I want to get them swimming perfect. I want to know exactly what I'm doing with them. Test out different lengths, different materials, different densities of the heads. But yeah, man, that's a sweet fly. I like it.
So you think you can use that to target all species there, or are you just kind of keying in on one with that?
Yeah, cod will climb all over that. They really will. They push so much water. That kick, the movement, the amount of action it gets in a short distance is perfect for these fish. I really think they're going to be big for cod in Australia. I really do. Other fish like the barramundi, you know, they also lay up in still water in lakes and such. But I also think there's applications for that in snag grilling fish in salt water as well. I think it's heaps of applications. It's just a technically perfect fly. It's perfect. You know, it really is. I'm stoked. I don't know if you can tell.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Hey, I got some questions about the Murray cod. Are you catching them in moving water? You catch them in still water? Where do you find them the most?
Yeah.
Or both?
You're right.
Both?
Yeah, both, yep. So they're native, so they they breed by themselves. They're in running water in the streams, pretty shallow streams, small pools. It's pretty epic fishing. Really nice sort of gorge country and stuff like that. But they also live in lakes. And when they live in lakes, they get big. They've got the potential to grow to 6 foot, I guess you could say, 1.8 metres.
Whoa.
Knew I was going to struggle with the conversion here, but it's roughly about that.
It's early in the morning. We'll let you slide.
I'm dosed. That's all good. I've had the caffeine for sure.
But
yeah, so they get pretty big, and like in the still water, they just eat big shit. You know, like they eat big stuff. They eat themselves. I mean, not themselves, but they eat smaller cod. They eat. You know, they're pretty. Everything I read about and see about muskie, they look very similar. You know, they seem very similar. You know, I don't want to. I hope I'm not insulting anyone by saying that.
No, not one bit.
The observation. Sorry.
I said not one bit.
Yeah, well, the observation is just standing on the outside looking in at muskie. They seem very similar. You know, they're a fish of 1,000 casts as well. Can be. They can be chewing their heads off some days. You know, in a wild scenario, they're a lot more opportunistic. But, you know, like the saying goes, the big fish, man, if you want to get the big fish, you've got to feed them the groceries. They like something big. They're going to waste their time for something small, you know.
That is your dominant predator fish there?
Yes and no. I mean, you don't really get an overlap of big freshwater predators here too much. We've got you got barramundi, and that's more of a northern Australia, which is the hotter part of Australia sort of fish. And they breed in the freshwater. They can live in the lakes. You know, they get big too. They can grow to 1.8 meters as well, 6 foot. Not that I've ever seen one that big, but they can. And yeah, but they don't overlap. The cod are more of a colder environment. As you can imagine, their metabolism is probably a lot slower than the warmer water fish. So, you know, you can cast them, you can knock them on the head basically, you know, 10 or 12 times before they decide to eat some days.
So how big does toga get?
Toga get, oh, this is pretty arguable actually. Like you read the books and stuff and they say they get to, and I'm just going to talk in metric here. You know, they'll get to, say, 70 centimetres, 80 centimetres in the books, they say. But, yeah, look, you hear them getting to sort of 1.2 metres, you know. What's that, 40 inches, something like that, you know?
Yeah.
30s.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yep.
Yeah, they're big. They're a big prehistoric-looking fish. Both in sort of remind me of them a little bit, but they're more of an arowana. They don't have the pintail like an arowana. Yeah, they're quite an aggressive fish. They're very prehistoric-looking. They jump. They're aggressive. You can sight fish for them. They're a pretty cool fish.
Do any of these fish have teeth? Do you have to fish wire with them, or
do you not? They've all got teeth. Not like musky though.
Okay.
Like, they're not looking like Dracula or nothing. these things have got like Barra got like a real raspy sort of, you know, teeth like sandpaper sort of stuff. They're more of an implosive feeder. They just swallow stuff whole. Kite have got. When they get big, they just got like a big row of needles in their mouth. Smaller fish, you can jaw grip them. Tiger got, they got a pretty gnarly set of choppers, those fish, you know. I still jaw grip those things, but I got real careful with those things. But I only do that because they calm right down. I don't think they know what's going on when someone sticks their thumb in their mouth, to be honest with you. So it's, they just calm right down.
So do you have any, back to flies a little bit, do you have any patterns that you design that you sell commercially, or are they mostly?
Not really. Not that I can really claim to, you know, like it's, you know, I could come up with something that's a bit of a spin, and I've got names that I call these flies a bit tongue in cheek, that I've developed for certain species that are derivatives of another type of fly. But at the end of the day, I'm just tying other people's patterns and putting my own sort of creativity into them. But, you know, things like cicadas and stuff like that, I haven't seen anyone else do. I have a crack at those things. You guys get cicadas over there?
Guess yeah.
You
would. Yeah, we do.
Yep. You know, stuff like that. And I got like a bucktail deceiver on a tie on a bendback hook that those barramundi live in some pretty deep salad, you know, so you just got to chuck a weedless fly right in there, but I hate weed guards, so just bring that back out nice and squeaky clean, and it usually gets eaten in the weed. So just things like that, probably those two more than anything else, but I still wouldn't claim them as something I've probably fine-tuned them, but haven't developed them, that's for sure.
I saw that the bend back that you tied, it looks just like the freshwater the saltwater striper flies that we tie for over here.
Yeah, like a type of deceiver.
Yeah, like a bend back. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're sweet.
Sorry?
I said they're sweet, yeah.
Why do you guys tie them in bend back?
I don't know. I've never fished for saltwater stripers. But I've seen them in some of the books.
Yep.
So
yeah, I think it's a pretty good hookup rate on those RX hooks. They're sweet for that stuff. That stinger pattern just lines up perfectly. You bend it, it runs parallel with a little bit of shanky developing to tie on. Just a sweet hook, really nice hook.
I'm guessing the guys tie them here for they do it for surf casting for the stripers, so they don't, I don't know, snag up on the surf.
They get rocks and stuff like that on the bottom.
Probably. Yeah.
Potentially hook up on. Yeah, it's a good fly for that. That's definitely for sure. Yeah, I've used it over in, you know, places like Christmas Island, fishing for GTs on the flats, where a hook point down would just hang up on the stag coral. And the GTs love it. It's a great fly. The deceiver's just a great fly, you know. It's well proven all around the world. And that's just a variation of it, really.
Yep. Hey, so on the fishing side of things, one thing that, you know, we see a lot with you that haven't really much on other guys is the Loomis edge rod.
Yep.
What got you into that? I've been seeing you promoting it pretty hard.
Yeah. Look, I've always been a Loomis fan. You know, it's back in my early days. You know, like when I splurged out on quality gear, I was buying conventional rods. They were Loomis rods, and it gave me the confidence to spend, you know, drop a bit of coin on a fly rod and get into it. And that was about 20 years ago, and I haven't looked back since. So, I'll be honest, I was a bit disappointed when Gary parted ways with G Loomis a bit, and I was hooked up with another Australian custom rod builder called Dust Rods, and I was looking for blanks for that dude just to sort of help him, you know, prove his line a bit. Got talking with the supplier, and you know, they just ended up offering me a position, you know, as a pro staffer. It was a pretty easy transition for me because I was. You know, the dudes from Dusk are great dudes, great rods, all that sort of stuff. But I'm just such a big fanboy of that stuff. You know, I like it. They're sweet rods, man. I aside from my deal with it, in all honesty, I'd be buying them anyway, even if I was on another team. I love them. They're great.
On the action, are they super fast? What are you looking for in a rod for the fishery you have?
That's a good question. Hey, they're a fast action rod. They're a lot more progressive for shorter casts, whereas traditionally fast action rods have been pretty shit ass for that. You know, like you'd have to overline them and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But just the range you can get with the casting accuracy with these edge rods is, you know, it seems to be a bit of a step up to what I've been used to in the whole time I've been fly fishing. And you know, I've been fishing GLX rods mainly, you know, previously, and I'm also a CCI with Triple F. I'm not a member of the Triple F, but I'm just, you know, I still actively teach, and I get to cast a lot of rods. And you know, like it's quite clever with what they've done, how they've made it really soft for shorter casts. But the grunt, like you'll never, your ability will never catch up to the potential that thing's got to chuck a line. You know, it's just got grunt and spades. You know, it's a pretty cool rod. I like it, and that's the full range. You know, like, well, I've got a spread from 6 to 10, it's pretty good. I like them.
What's your favorite go to for everything? Your all around rod, like, what's your weight wise?
That'd be an 8-weight.
8-weight
for sure. Yeah, there's and to continue on the spear with edge, like, they're so light. I can fish an 8 when, you know, I've forgotten my 6 or something like that for bass and or something like that. And you know, I could also use it for tuna. I've used it for, I've caught some pretty good fish on it, like probably a bit big for the rod, but it just handles it so sweet. They knock fish over so well. There's so much stored energy in that graphite. It's just, yeah, pretty good. I think it's I keep banging on about it, but you know, like I give them for people to try. They're still quite new edge, you know. But everyone's reaction is the same. Everyone's sort of is skeptical. They've all got their favorite brands, and I respect that. But it's a pretty easy rod to get used to. They're a sweet rod for sure. But my favorite rod for that would be the 8, definitely.
Nice.
Back to the fish a little bit. You said you time mainly for freshwater natives. Do you have an invasive population that's around there?
Oh yeah.
What are some invasive species that?
We've got tilapia, we've got European carp, common carp, mirrors, koi. Pretty fun. I don't really have a lot of luck with those things, but they're not near me either, so I've got to travel for them. Look cool though. And we've got a pretty heavy population of trout, I'm going to get caned for this in Australia. They're feral. I don't care which way you look at it. They're feral. Plus you're eating them. But they're here as well, and it's a pretty big market, I guess, for ferals. People target them. You know, it's illegal to put a carp back over here and tilapia. There's a northern river in Australia that's just shown up with a peacock bass in it. That's a big deal because it'll just decimate the native species. But if they take over, but yeah, that's basically the extent of it. I'm probably missing a few, but they're the ones that I'm aware of.
If you ever do get a chance to catch a carp while you're traveling, they are fun.
Oh yeah, I've been put in front of them.
Oh okay.
I've done a lot of swearing at them.
We have also.
Yeah, they look fun. Anything that's sight fishing, I'm down for. I think that's pretty cool.
On your flies, the game changers you tie, you posted a video and they swim disgusting. They're awesome. Do you have any tricks that you're putting into the fly to make them swim so nice?
Yeah. Oh, look, it's it took me a long time. I tied so many shit sandwiches for those things. Man, I've got a pile of them. I've got a strip down that I just don't even want to look at. And every time I tie one, I'd be like, oh, this thing's going to be banging. I'm going to put this in the water. It's going to swim perfectly. I'd chuck it in. It'd be like a dead stick, you know? And so then eventually just kept going back and back, and I'm trying to look at I'm a very theory-based fisherman fly tie. If it works, I've got to be able to repeat it. So I'm trying to sort of make something that I can repeat and make it work. And I know this is going to sound a bit vague, but if you it's there to be copied in fish. Now I reckon with that fly, like, it's fish are very, you know, they're very hydrodynamic. The way the water passes over them is obviously to create the least amount of resistance. I know their muscles are wagging their tail. But the same thing happens with those flies, and the principles that I've read and learned from reading, you know, pop flies the new book from Bob Popovich and stuff like that, about how a bulky head affects a sparser arse end, you know. That I apply that as well. And the taper goes all the way through from the shank selection. I don't run it from 10, 15, 20, 25. I double them up and might run 2 10s, 2 15s and stuff like that. The material I just use is that wrap, the Blaine Chocolate Game Changer wrap. Sort of mainly stick with. I haven't really been able to have the time to sort of branch out from that. But I stuck with that and made that sort of work, which is pretty cool for things like, you know, 3.5, 5-inch, 6-inch flies. But yeah, Tony Santoroni also gave me quite a bit of, and I give you a shout out to that dude. He's given me a fair bit of advice. He's a pretty cool dude. Very free with his advice. It's pretty good. Same with you dudes as well. Thanks for that. But yeah, he told me about keeling it, a bit of weight. And so, you know, just expanding out off those sort of principles. The hook selection is pretty important. Things like weed guards affect it. So as far as tricks go, I just try to make it, you know, hydrodynamic. So it's and if you look at a fish, they're not. Some of them aren't really perfectly oval. You know, there's some of them are flat on the side, like, you know, like a herring or some of that. I don't know what you'd get over there. That'd be like that. But yeah, I'm trying not to sound blasé about it. I don't want to make it sound like it's a feeling. but it's that. You know, like you can't. I don't put hooks in the rear end of it because. Personally, I can't make them swim with that. It's again the taper. The taper reduces in the shape and the weight all the way down. The tail has to be nice and light. Has to be lighter than the last shank you're attaching to it, and it's got to work that way. When I see some flies that, and they're quite bulky in the ice end, they've got a hook in it. I can't see how they swim, and that's why I put that video up just to sort of prove what I'm doing, how I'm making them. And I've got to say as well, the colours vary. I can't get the white in that material to swim at all. No one can tell me why. Just can't make it happen. Gray is the closest I can get to swim.
Huh. First off, Tony's a pretty all right dude. And
yeah.
And secondly, you tie multicolor. Are you sharpieing them? Are you Copic painting them? Yeah.
Some of them I am. Some of them are like, because I'm only using a wrap, so I can't stack.
Yeah, you can't stack color.
Yeah. So I'm using those Copic markers. They're pretty good. They don't seem to sort of fade out or anything like that. Sharpies do. Sharpies just sort of fade out and wash out a little bit. Those Copic markers are much nicer to use, that's for sure.
So, being you tie full-time, how many hours a week do you use your tie?
Oh, man, I'm at the vice every day at the moment. I'm playing a little bit of catch-up. I recently had a construction business that I just sold. That took a little bit of time away from the vice. So I'm playing a little bit of catch up. Right now I'm sitting down for 8 to 10 hours every day, you know, and Saturday, Sunday, every day of the week. I'm watching so many windless mornings go by at the moment. It's pretty hard. I'd much rather be fishing. I've got to be honest with you. But I reckon that I'll get it down to 5 days a week and probably 8 hours a day. I've got a lead time of like 3 to 4 weeks. People are pretty cool with that. I've been stretching that out a little bit for some people, but I've got some pretty cool customers. They're all pretty good.
Now, while we're on the fly talk, where does it all start? What's your vice? Do you want to give a shout out to like the vice you're using?
Yeah, I'm using Dynaking. I'm using a Dynaking indexer, and I guess the same as the Loomis thing. You know, I had a little Indian vice, and then I bought got talked into using a Dynaking, and had that thing for like nearly 15 years. It was great, and then upgraded, jumped onto their pro community and just, upgraded to the ultimate indexer. It's a sweet vice, man. I it's a pleasure to tie with for so long, you know, that's for sure.
Right.
Your customer base, is it mainly in Australia? Are you shipping flies to the States? What?
It's mainly Australia. I'm shipping flies to the States, yeah. Mainly deer hair stuff. But, yeah, mainly Australia, you know.
So this might be going a little bit backwards, but how did you get your starts in the fishing and even in the fly tying in general? Who got you started in it?
Fishing, I've been fishing since I've been a little kid. You know, I went from bait to using live bait and then seeing how effective that was to lures and stuff like that. And then, yeah, I just started to get more and more finesse, and then the fly fishing looked pretty cool. Had no friends who did it. everyone thought I was a weirdo for doing it. And, yeah, I just sort of stuck with it. I know, it appealed to me. I liked it. It just seems to be the hardest way to catch fish, and that's not the appeal, but that just makes me feel stupid just to stick with it sometimes. But it's a pretty cool way to catch fish, that's for sure. But, yeah, the fly tying aspect of it, I'd rock up and I'd buy flies for the first couple of years of trying it, getting into it. And there's just things that I just weren't happy with or didn't, you know, if I could tweak it some way or something like that. So started getting into just doing my own thing, you know, I guess.
Hey, Chris, one thing you just posted here, what I think today, was the artwork on the Cliff Box. How long have you been doing that for? That was awesome.
Longer than what I charge for it, that's for sure. Yeah, I'd be a few hours now. I'd be 5 or 6 hours from the idea. You know, like I'll have a scratch around a few ideas, rub a bit out, and start up again. And I'm pretty new to paint, but I started doing it with Sharpies. I couldn't get the colours to blend very well, with my full time job with fly tying, I like the way I can just be a lot more creative with my flies. And that was one of the things I wanted to do. It started off as a bit of a side project to supplement my income for going full time. I've just been so busy tying flies. I'm so slack with those boxes. It takes me so long to get to them. But I pretty much dedicate a Sunday for it or something like that, you know, get a few flies in or something like that. But just sit there cruising, have a few beers and just, you know, do it all the way.
Have you been drawing since childhood or is that something you picked up later on?
Oh, yeah, I didn't pay attention in school at all. I used to draw heaps. I like what people do with it on their tackle boxes. I've done it on my fly boxes and I bring them out. And, yeah, it's pretty cool to see something that's, you know, it's original and stuff like that. I like it. Other people like it. There's people doing it, obviously. I'm not pioneering here. And some of those guys are just... they're awesome at it, you know. Like it's I could only aspire to be that good as some of those guys. But look, I do what I do. I've got my own style, and I draw Australian species, I guess, and that's my point of difference.
Do people have a custom request for you, or is it just you draw something and put it up, and someone will say, "I want that one"?
Yeah, no, dudes do. They they do. They I get requests, and people tell me what they want. Like that one I put up today. That's an Australian saltwater species called a mulloway or a jewfish. Pretty cool fish. I get it. But, yeah, like I've never drawn one before. That's the first time I've had a crack at it.
It turned out pretty all right.
Yeah,
it came up all right. It's a caricature. So it's, I don't want to, I'm not trying to come across as, I just want it to be recognisable as a jewfish, mainly. That's it. It's got my style. I like it.
Can I ask you a question about your birds? Are you tying specific bird species? Or are you tying... I see a cardinal, but are you tying other bird species? Or are you just going freestyle and bird shape? Or
I got a book for Australian birds. I got a book on me bench for me fly tying. There's just a field guide for Australian birds, and yeah, I draw a blank. Someone wants a bird, and if they don't, look, I'm going to diversify. When someone rings up and says I want an order, just tie whatever color you want. I'm just going to put it out there and just let those people know if they're listening that that's annoying, you know. If you can just give me the colours, that'd be great. And so if someone does that with a bird, look, it's cool. I don't want to deter anyone. Yeah, I'll take your money. But
Jesus.
if I sort of don't have inspiration or don't know what to tie, I'll go through that book. That customer I got with the Cardinal, he's from Michigan, and he sent a list of ones. I got like a red-bellied woodpecker and some other stuff, hummingbird, they're doing all that sort of stuff, and he sent me pictures and he wants them like that, and that's cool. I enjoy the challenge. It's pretty cool. So I've never done a cardinal before, but those colors, I looked at those pictures, I've gone, oh man, I can't wait to get into this. These look pretty cool.
With the wings, are you tying those in and stacking around that, or are you just gluing them in afterwards? I'm a noob.
Yeah.
I'm a total noob to deer hair. I suck at it, so this is all a learning experience.
That's cool. I am. Look, with all due respect to Pat, this is his pattern.
Yeah.
He came up with this, and I don't I'm happy to expand on it and stuff, but like if I am and Pat's listen or gets back to him, I don't mean to tread on his toes by telling people this, but yeah, I'm gluing the wings together on the bench. I get a bit of like solar res, bone dry, and I layer the wings together, glue them together. I get a nice hard blade from doing that, and then I get like I heat up my bodkin, yeah, you know, heat up a little bit of the deer head, just make a little hole, and then I just glue them in, and then I'll heat them with a bit of flex resin at the top of that as well. Some of the cod and things like that can be pretty hard on them, like they can grab a wing, rip it off. It's happened before, so I really beef up those wings as best I can. The feathers are pretty, the hackle's pretty durable, you know, when it's by itself, but the way it attaches to the body, you can't, I can't imagine a way that you would tie them in and shape the hair. I think it'd be quite difficult. So that's the way I do it anyway. And I've sort of learned from just looking at Pat's stuff and looking at it and going, how the fuck do you do that, you know, and stuff. And so he's a big inspiration to me. Like, I've followed him for a while and I like his stuff. It's good.
So the majority of the people that buy your birds, are they fishing them or are they displaying them?
I'm tying some displays for tackle shops and stuff, fly shops and things like that. Most people are fishing them. I get people come back and say it's too good to fish. So I send them, please fish it. I'd love to see that thing get lost. You know, it's good for retail, but but it'd be disappointing to not see them get fished. They get tied to fish. You know, I weight them, I keel them, and you know, I make them sit in the water, ass down, so it's so they get eaten. People can use it for display. Like again, like I'll take their money, but you know, but yeah, I'd love to see them get fished. You know, that's for sure.
So, does your fishery have areas with trees kind of lining the water where birds would fall in, or are they kind of more open and out there?
Yeah, we do. Yep. We, you know, you chuck them under where in spring, you know, like you get a lot of nesting birds that hang over water and they're probably in the standing timber because of, you know, protection from predators, get them on the ground, big lizards and stuff like that, but snakes and stuff. But, you get birds fall out of nests over water. Not all the time, but it happens. I'd like to believe these fish know what they're looking at when they eat it, but they eat it. They love it, you know. It's a surprisingly effective fly. It started off as a bit of a gimmick for me. Wanted to tie one, wanted to challenge myself. But once I chucked out in the water, mate, the action that the thing saw was much better than any other diver or just a deer hair popper or anything, really. You know, I don't know what they're looking at. Like I said, I'd like to think they're looking at a bird. They think they're looking at a bird.
I'm going to go into weeds for just a second. You just mentioned lizards and snakes.
Yeah.
How much of that stuff do you have to actually look out for while you're fishing on riverbanks and stuff?
Oh, it's very real. That's for sure. Yeah. Definitely. There's heaps of snakes here.
Snakes and spiders and...
Sorry?
I said snakes and spiders and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, spiders. I hate spiders. I'm okay with snakes. Spiders suck. They, you know, you get some pretty burly spiders here that just, they like to trap birds and shit like that. And it's just, yeah, some of those big ones aren't real bad for you, but it's more the little ones that sort of hang under a chair or, you know, under a toilet seat or something like that, you know, that you got to really look out for. Southern states have got some pretty burly spiders, like a funnel web. We got some pretty dangerous shit here, you know, really.
Yeah, for real.
And the snakes aren't too bad, you know. They tend to move out of your way. They'll stay on the ground if you corner them, but they won't. They won't be quiet about it. They won't. I'm sure that, you know, there's people who have stood on them and hadn't seen their display, but, yeah, they're not real keen to bite you. Like, it's a big use of energy for them to make more venom and sure, they can dry bite you. Probably like, I'm sure the snakes in the States are the same, you know. But yeah. But there's a lot here. They love water. The animals are around the water. They're everywhere, you know. But I don't live near crocs here. There's been fishing. I had a friend of mine took me fishing up northern Queensland. We were fishing this river it's well known for being very populated for crocs. Been up traveling in these sort of areas for a bit, but that river, that was pretty hectic, you know. It was we're in a 13-foot tinny that's probably sitting about 6 inches above the water, and there's crocs bigger than us, half 15 feet away from us. Ugh. You know, they could easily flip the boat. But the locals up there are just so casual about it, you know.
Speaking of boats, do you have Australian builders there, or are they all shipped into you?
We've got heaps of Australian boat builders here, and they're good. They're a bit more agricultural than some of the stuff I see coming out of the States, you know, like the bass boats and flash boats and stuff like that. I've got an American boat. I've got a Boston Whaler. I've got a 13-foot Whaler that I did a ground up on, big renovation on. It's a sweet boat. I love that boat. But previous to that, I've had Australian boats.
That's a solid boat.
Yeah, it's a wicked boat. It's just goes anywhere. It's such a, yeah. I got a 50 horsepower on a 13-foot boat, and that's fun. It's great.
Now, I noticed you're a you're a certified cast instructor. Do you have any time to get into any of that with, like, local fishermen, like, when you're not tying?
Yeah, I do lessons. I got people that sort of just know, you know, they get onto us through someone they know. I don't, like, it's in my profiles. I do put it out there to a degree, but I don't push it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people doing it. Yeah, it's not so much that. I'm so busy with flies, you know, but I do do it. I do it professionally. And I've got people that that are regulars, and I work with them in improving beyond what I've taught them. But, yeah, no, not a lot of it. I probably only do maybe 10 lessons a year or something like that for people.
Right.
Yeah, I kind of like it like that. I wouldn't like to be a full-time casting instructor.
We've heard the test to become a casting instructor is really tough. Is that the case? Do you have a hard time with it?
Say that again?
I said we've heard the test to become a casting instructor is extremely tough. How was it on your end?
Yeah, I got tested by the governors. They came over from the States. There was no master CCIs here or governors in Australia at the time. I got done in 2005, and they were pretty strict. We were lucky enough to score 25 knot wins on the oval when we were doing it.
Yeah.
So it was kind of made it a bit of a challenge. But yeah, it was pretty cool. I practiced quite a bit. It was good for my own skills. It was good. It was challenging, definitely challenging. I wouldn't say it's impossible or hard. The written test was a bit foreign to me. It was pretty pretty trout orientated, you know, hatches and stuff like that. And I mean, we just don't get that where I live. You know, I'd much rather learn about or be tested on the life cycle of a bay anchovy or something like that, and more in the saltwater where we started. You know, but there's really no aspect with that too much. Well, there wasn't at the time with the Triple F. So getting the skills down, translating them to what they wanted to hear was, you know, they want to hear your communication. They want to be able to hear that you can communicate the skills and the theory to a student. So all these, you know, the men's and the roll casts and all that sort of stuff, you know, the stream craft sort of casting, you have to be able to do that. And it was a little bit foreign for me, but it wasn't too bad after a bit of work. And I still use that nowadays and starting to try and get into single-handed spay and things like that for skinnier water and stuff like that. But I mainly fish out of a boat. I mainly cast to catch fish. I don't cast in the park, really, unless I'm with a student or something like that. That's sort of me. I tie flies to catch fish. I cast to catch fish. I fly fish to catch fish. It's all centered around fishing, you know.
Going back to the flies for a second, I see like a lot of your fly patterns. You put the weedless stuff on there, or like a
weed guard.
Sorry. A lot of people ask, like, you know, for that not to be there, or is it interchangeable, or?
I don't put it on unless someone asks for it.
Okay.
I don't charge any extra for it like that. But it's a bit of an art in that as well, I suppose. Like, it can really be a fish guard in a lot of circumstances. But if you're not getting it in where the fish are, you're not going to get it eaten in the first place, you know. So it's, you know, you might find a cod in a log jam in running water. You know, you might get the scenario where you chuck a game changer in there. I don't know how much there's been in the US, but, you know, like, say a $30 fly, you know, you chuck it in there with no weed guard, you get a knot in your line trying to untangle it, this thing sinks down to the logs and it's see you later, you know. It's but with a weed guard, you could walk it out, no problem. So it's a bit of a compromise. You know, you might miss a few hits, but you'll get your fly back and you'll live to fight another day. You know, you'll be able to put it in another front of another fish again and again and again. It really depends on what you want out of it, I suppose.
Now, what's the biggest fly you've tied for a customer? What, like, your average length?
The average length wouldn't be the biggest. It varies. I guess I started to muck around with beasts for a while. And I guess that comes back down to the conversation of bucktail quality. But, you know, I kind of stopped doing those to a bit. I had a customer feed it to a Queensland groper, which is just a ginormous fish. It's just a stupid thing to do. And it didn't come back. And I was just gutted. And I was, I really would have liked to have seen something decent eat it. But it was a decent fish. But there was just no way in the world. That thing was like a 200-pound fish under a mothership. You know, it was ridiculous. So they were big flies. They were sort of sitting around, you know, 12 inches and stuff. These Beaufords and stuff like that, they're probably coming around some of the biggest stuff I've done, sort of sitting around 10 inches and stuff. I want to get, this is why I like the Beaufords, I want to get them bigger. They look like a very doable fly to get bigger. I recently sent that photo to you, Mark, about that cod with a 70-centimetre lizard hanging out of its mouth,
yeah,
and it still ate a lure, you know. I think they're gonna rise to some pretty big shit, those cod, you know. Yeah, I really do. I think those Beaufords are going to be great. But as far as what I've done, game changers, I mainly stick with the wrap. They're kind of limited to maybe 7 inches max, you know. And even that, they're not real crash shot. 5 inches is a sweet spot for that wrap, in my opinion. Anything bigger, got to do stuff like what Nightmare's doing, I reckon, the bucktail, the mega feather game changers and stuff like that. You know, that's how I'd get bigger with that. But I think as far as going big, those Beaufords, they're the future. That's definitely for me. And going big, that's for sure.
Right.
How is the fly fishing community in your area? Do you have a big community or?
Not really.
No?
We get told here that, I don't know, you guys might be able to verify this. There's not nowhere near the population of the States here. It's something like 22 million or something like that. We get told that there's the same population of fly fishermen in the States as there is for the whole population of Australia. Does that sound something realistic, you know, to you guys? It's pretty big over there.
I've always heard the people that are interested in fly fishing is the same amount of people that are interested in model trains. So
heaps of geeks in the States.
Yeah, yeah, we're all geeks for different things. So
it's a tight-knit community. With the induction of like social media, egos are coming out. It probably happens in the States as well. Probably happens everywhere. You know, I get on social media to sell. You know, I'm on there mainly for that. But, you know, I see some people get pretty consumed with it, which sort of divides the fly fishing community to a degree. It's pretty sad in a way. You know, it seems to be, in comparison to the community in the States, look, again, standing outside looking in, you guys are so much more positive towards one another and encouraging compared to in Australia. Australia's got a pretty staunch tall poppy syndrome going on here, which is cool. I try not to get involved in it. I try not to pay attention to it. I like to be just doing what I do. And the good thing about social media is someone's pissing you off, you just block them and they're dead.
Yes, that's the best part about it. Do you guys have any?
Pretty much.
Do you guys have any like Trout Unlimited clubs or any fly fishing clubs that are doing conservation work or anything? Or just getting the guys together to drink beers?
Yeah, that's probably about the extent of it. It's pretty Australian. There's clubs here. The trout guys are probably a lot more organised than the guys who fish for freshwater nays or saltwater. It's a really polarising part of the community, I suppose, the guys who fish for trout to the guys who fish for natives. A little bit of a crossover, you know, with some people, but some people are like just trout, trout, trout with everything, you know, and they're just... You get some retailers and stuff who sell trout materials and stuff, and you tell them you want some hackle for deceivers, and they go, why would you waste a good hackle patch on a saltwater fly? You know, that's a bit of the mentality of that sort of stuff. And I guess it's sort of translating over to bigger stuff like the cod flies and stuff like that. A lot of the patterns are more from saltwater patterns, and that's, again, to go back to the Beaufort, that's why I think they're going to be so unique for this stuff. But as far as the clubs go, there's the further north we go into the tropical regions of Australia, there's some pretty well-organised saltwater fly fishing clubs. I used to be a president of the Saltwater Fly Fishing Association here for a short period of my life. We did quite a bit of fly fishing-related community work, I guess, to a degree, a lot of outings and stuff like that, tying nights. But I tell you, that iron fly concept sounds pretty cool. I'd like to see that incorporated more into Australian fly tying clubs. I think that'd be pretty mad, actually. Pretty cool.
It's super cool. We did a little one here Shit, it was about a year ago. It was super fun.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. I think you know, we model a lot of what you guys do, you know, patterns and stuff like that, and techniques. You know, this would be great to see that Ironfly get used more. I reckon it'd be fun, you know. It'd probably attract more of a fresher crew, you know, into fly fishing.
So does Australia have any current stocking programs they do on a yearly basis?
Yeah, definitely. Again, trout, pretty full on. All the lakes have got what they call a stocked impoundment program. You got to buy a license, and the money from that goes into finlings and stuff like that for bass and cod and barramundi and things like that. A lot of the lakes, nearly all the lakes are pretty well stocked, you know. As far as native or wild stocks, the streams get stocked with trout. No one stocks saltwater. The pros will just take all that.
So how do you guys do your permits or your licenses over there? I mean, we talked to a lot of guys around the world, and it's different everywhere.
It's basically a yearly fee. It's only $30 Australian, I think, off the top of my head. I'm not exactly sure, but it's not very much. It's a pretty cheap investment, really, into the future of the lakes and the stocks. I don't think there's many people who sort of go, you know, fuck that, I'm not doing that. You know, most people are pretty keen to participate in that sort of shit, for sure.
And that covers you for the whole country?
No. Oh, in some of the states, they've got a license to fish in saltwater everywhere. You know, they're in New South Wales, which is the next state along. They've got that. And that's a really good thing. I think that's it's something that probably in my state should adopt sooner rather than later. If anything, it just gives point of contact for fisheries to, you know, make people aware of undersized fish or no keep species or, you know, things like that. But it just takes, there's still a bit of a culture of people illegally netting and stuff like that here and, you know, taking undersized species, and particularly in the saltwater and the freshwater. And I think a license would probably get around that. Is that what it does? Is that how effective it is? And do you guys have a license in other parts of the world? Is it pretty effective like that?
Yeah, we have to buy a different license for every state.
Yep. So. Most of us carry a couple different states. But
yep. I usually get like three states.
But it's same kind of concept, though. Like our state here, we have to have a trout stamp. We have to have a stamp for up the area where the fish that they stock are. So it's,
It's a moneymaker.
It's a moneymaker because what they do is they close that section of the river down even if there's native fish when them fish are stocked there. So even if you're fishing that area for native fish, you have to have the trout stamp because the trout are put there.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah.
Kind of stupid. I think that's a good idea. It probably met with a bit of resistance. Is it recent?
No, it went over just perfectly fine, but the fact of the matter is trying to get it removed isn't good.
How do you mean?
They don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no reason, that a stock fish should take precedent over a native fish.
Yeah, oh, definitely. But yeah, totally agree.
They don't want to hear that.
Not when there's money involved. Someone's making income off it.
Nope.
No, the state likes their money.
We're kind of fortunate though, like you and how we are with yearly license. A lot of the European countries, I mean, it's daily passes, and I mean, you pay every day you go.
Oh right, okay.
Yeah, it's hefty too.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that wouldn't work here. Most times we're launching it 3:30 in the morning to get top water. You know, I can't imagine paying for a license before that. Probably paid online. I don't know, but yearly fee's fine for me.
Yeah.
So you mentioned something right off the bat in this interview that I want to touch on before we let you go that I have to hear about. You're talking about marlin and chest deep water. Can you tell some stories?
I could tell you some stories. it gets pretty blown up, eh? You know, like there's bluefin tuna and there's big GTs and, you know, there's cobia and stuff all come up on these flats. This is there's an island in Australia called Fraser Isle. Apparently, it's the largest sand island in the world, and it's only about an hour's drive from my house, and then an hour to run up to where the fish are. But it's like an ocean flat. You know, like it's probably laterally where these fish are, maybe 40, probably more, 80 nautical mile from the mainland. So it's like a sand spit out in the middle of some pretty decent blue water. So these juvenile black marlin mainly will come up on the flats and they'll hunt fish, and they'll get in some pretty skinny water, like, you know, probably less than, probably close to knee deep in some circuits. I've seen them up there finning in waves that are only, you know, a couple of inches tall breaking, you know. But they're not silly, but they're up there to eat. You know, if you get something in front of them, they'll eat every time.
You're getting them with a fly rod?
Say it again?
Do you get them with a fly rod?
Yeah, I've only ever caught them on fly. I've had a couple of eats get dropped and stuff, but you also tease up there. I've switched and baited my first one only last year. I've had plenty of shots at them. I don't spend that much time up there because there's certain times of year that they're sort of, you know, not, I wouldn't say guaranteed to be there, but they should be there. And you'll go up there one day and for whatever reason, you know, they just won't be there. You know, you'll be cruising the flat all day and you won't see one. And then you'll see someone put a video up the next day and there's a pot of seven or eight billies just milling around this bait ball, and they're just chucking whatever they can at them and they're eating it every time. So, you know, opportunities are limited, but they're there. You hear some people talking about them tipping on merkins and stuff like that. That's just not true. You know, things like that. You know, there's some pretty amazing sights up there. You know, sometimes you get, like, I've seen, like, whale carcasses up there just getting mauled, you know, big sharks and cobia and stuff like that up there. And, you know, obviously GTs and not that I've seen permit up there, but I believe that they're up there. It's a pretty good flats fishery. But that place is a World Heritage listed area. And from my knowledge, is the only one in the world that gets absolutely raked by professional fishermen, you know. The nets up there are just, they're crazy, you know. And these guys just hit the flats. They run big nets around, like, you know, waist-deep water and just take whatever they can, you know. So there's, it sometimes decimates the stock levels for things like golden trevally and the permit, queenfish, stuff like that. Pretty sad, really. You know, it's such a lot of potential, and the billies won't come up there if there's no bait. And these what these guys are mainly catching is, you know, they're after the bait or the fish that these billies are eating, and that's why the predators don't come up. You know, so yeah, you sort of get what I'm saying there. It's a good fishery. It's a bit hit and miss, but it's very unique in the fact that these billies will come into some pretty skinny water for sure.
Yeah, most of the time around here, people or anyone that is fly fishing for marlin, they're trolling and teasing them up and then casting a fly to them. So that's definitely something different. That is a cool
yeah
place.
Yeah, yeah. To cast at a free swimming marlin is that's pretty cool. You know, it's
goddamn right it is.
I don't have too many places. Say it again.
I said goddamn right it is.
Yeah, man. Yeah, yeah, man. It's very unique. That's for sure. But it probably should be better protected. And yeah, only that we were just talking about licenses and stuff for wreck guys. There's a lot of trailers at that boat ramp as well. And if every one of those guys bagged out, you know, it'd be great to see some sort of control, you know. But I don't think it'll happen in my lifetime.
Yeah, that's a shame. But there's always where there's a will, there's a way, you know.
Yeah. Yep. There's guys that put petitions together. You know, the guys that lobby the government. People have gone insane lobbying the government for trying to protect these flats, but you know, there's just money involved. There's a pretty old, deep-rooted professional fishing culture in that area, and they maintain they do nothing wrong, and the fish always come back. But you know, even in my short lifetime, in the times I've been fishing that place, I've seen it just froth and just bait everywhere, and just so much life. And and then you just see it. Yeah, it's just nothing now. You know, it's very barren.
So, Chris, people that want your flies, where's the best? Mm-hmm. What's the best way to get a hold of you? Is it through Instagram? Do you have a website? What's the best way?
Yeah, I don't have a website. I plan on getting one together. Surely it'll just be an example of what I tie. But yeah, social media, Facebook and Instagram is the best way to get hold of us.
Do you have any listing of flies out there, or are they all just kind of special order and everybody kind of just based off what you have on Instagram?
Instagram's an example of what I tie. Same with Facebook. What's on Facebook is what's on Instagram, like everyone. But I do. Like I offer flies for mainly the freshwater natives, like as I was saying, and any fly that can be, you know, can catch those fish, I'll give it a crack, or I already tie it. I don't want to call them easy flies, but the flies like, you know, shrimps and stuff like that, and just you know, cheaper flies. It's a hard way to word this because I respect it, but I don't do it because there's just a pretty flooded market of dudes doing that stuff already. So I just try to remain unique. Anything now, like tying these Buford's, like I'm trying to introduce them to Australia, and I'll work on it until it falls over or it does well, you know.
So we can't call down and order a dozen clousers for you to send to the States.
I'll take your money, dude. No drama.
I'm sure you will.
I've got a family to feed now. I'll definitely do clousers if it means coin.
did you want to touch at all on kind of how the accessibility is to getting any materials into your country?
I wouldn't call it a drama. I think it's a lot of it for people trying to get here into Australia. It's a matter of a lack of education and just an assumption of what customs are going to do. It's difficult. Can be difficult. It'd be difficult to get someone to send it as well. But, yeah, look, it's the stuff that's off the shelf here in Australia, the commercial tails, you know, a good tails are like, you know, 3 inches of hair and spiky stiff. It's terrible to tie with. So, you know, I'm you know, regularly sourcing good tails from other areas of the world, mainly the States, you know. But, yeah, it's difficult, man. And there's people who do get it confiscated when they bring it in, all sorts of stuff from all sorts of parts of the world. But, yeah, it's generally pretty doable. But, yeah, unless it's covered in dirt and shit and stuff like that, it's not going to come in. But if it's clean, yeah, like it should come in, you know. Yeah, is that where you're sort of getting at, that aspect of it? Or?
Yeah, that's all. I know because time to time it can be a little bit tough to get, you know, stuff into, and other times it's fairly smooth.
So yeah, like you said, well, if it comes, yeah, I think as long as they've been cleaned and you know, dyed and gone through that process, been, you know, processed, you know, to a degree, should be no drama. Mm-hmm. There's some hoops to jump through, forms to fill out, people to pay, all that sort of stuff, but
oh, yeah,
it can come in.
All
yeah.
The goodies.
Is there anything you want to touch on that we haven't hit on?
No, just that the show is pretty rad. I like listening to you guys and the guys you've had on. You've had some pretty good, so many guys you guys have had on, like have been, you know, people that I watch and look up to. And I'm stoked that you guys have had us on. Like it's good to tell you a little bit about Australia and what I do. And I'd like to go for that jacket that you guys are offering, like dudes like Brad and Tony and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe you have us back on.
Yeah. Tony still has one more appearance before he gets the jacket.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Now, you know, the fun part about it is, you know, talk with everybody from all over is, like yourself, you're getting into flies that we have here, and there's everybody can learn something, even if it's a fish in a different country. It might be something you do there to trigger fish or what have you to tie for them that, I mean, everybody learns from it.
Yeah, oh, 100%. You know, predatory fish seem to be have the rail of similarities, that's for sure. Those musky, they're massively interesting to me, you know. And like, there's a good chance I'll probably never get around to having a crack at one, but they translate to some of the species here quite well, and the techniques, the stuff that you guys do with, you know, heavy, fast-sinking lines and big flies and fish that'll just look at a fly, get past, and let them bump it in the head until they eat. You know, that's what they do here too. So, like I said, a lot of the patterns that we're doing in Australia, we're still so young with, you know, with some of these patterns and some of these flies and techniques that most of them are big, beefed up saltwater type patterns, you know. So that's good. It's social media really makes it a bit of a global exercise. You know, it's not hard to get information from you guys and vice versa. Yeah, so you know, things that we work on here, the more people trying it, the more innovation it creates, I guess.
Have you traveled out of the States at all to fish? Out of your country, I mean?
Out of my country, yeah. Only Christmas Island. Haven't gone anywhere else. I've traveled around Australia quite a bit, doing a bit of fishing, but it's a pretty epic place to travel around for fishing. I'm sure, like, everyone's backyard, it's pretty cool to fish, but yeah, it's a big place, Australia. A lot of untouched water. That's for sure.
You were just brought up how most of the predatory fish kind of sort of act the same. Do your fish, will they just follow, lazy follow a fly in like our muskie will? Do you have any chance of figure eight?
That figure eight technique is something I've learned from observing muskie.
Okay,
I've seen barramundi do it. They follow it all the way up and they'll just turn to the boat. And I wonder that if this presentation stopped traveling in a straight line and just tease it to make it go back and forth, it'd make it eat, you know, like what the muskie do.
Have you had it work for you?
I haven't tried it yet.
Oh, dude.
Haven't it, sorry?
It's going to be lights out when you do.
Figure eights are free, I hear.
Yep.
They're free. How's your arm?
Yeah, they're free, but when you get one to eat blind, it'll cost you probably a pair of undies. That's all.
Oh, yeah. Sounds good. That's what I'm there for.
Change your direction.
Yep. Yeah, I think other than that, you know, we appreciate you taking the time to come on and talk with us tonight. It's been fun.
Yeah, cool. Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll keep in touch and look forward to seeing what else you got coming up. You know, keep up the good work.
Yeah, no drama. Thanks, guys. Appreciate the support and thanks for having us on.
Absolutely, Chris. All right, Chris. Have a good day.
Yeah, have a good morning, man.
Right. Yep.
Thanks, guys. See you.
All right, later. Bye. And we're back. That was Chris Adams from Ammo Flies.
Fun.
So if
Australian fishing.
If anyone wants to check him out, check out ammo_flies on Instagram. That's where you can get a hold of him. Shoot him a DM.
I'm gonna buy get a bird. Cardinals. No, I want to get one of the. I'm gonna get a cardinal.
There's a lot of places with some overhang trees for largemouth that them things will be disgustingly good at.
Oh, get a starling.
Slaughter fish.
Oh, see if you can tie a starling.
Red wing blackbird.
Oh my God. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
There are a lot of them and a lot of robins.
Yeah, there are a ton of cardinals. Baby robin.
There's one on his IG that looks like a robin or an oriole. It's disgusting.
Be coming up on that season pretty soon.
The mallard. You got that little 12-foot
boat. There's a couple ponds.
Yeah, that mallard was
definitely dope. That could be deadly.
Yes, sir.
I'm sure you can get smallies to hit them.
Oh,
through riffles and stuff. But
maybe, yeah. Them little ones. Did you see the little ones he did that are barely bigger than like a nickel? They're like four times the size of it.
No.
He's got a couple posted beside like a small coin. Uh-huh. They're impressive.
And those mice are spot on too. Oh God. Yeah. Jeez.
I wonder if they skate mice for barramundi like we do for trout. Or not know, but...
That big 3-0 or 6-0 diver he makes.
Oh, that's lights out.
Pike.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, speaking of topwater poppers and stuff.
Yeah, I'm sitting here playing with a chunk of foam.
I bought a block of yoga foam. And one day while...
What was it packed in?
Hold on. There's a spider crawling down. It was packed in bubble wrap. They shipped it and they bubble wrapped it.
Foam and bubble wrap.
It was a block of foam.
In bubble wrap.
And they bubble wrapped it.
Okay.
But...
Taking precaution on your yoga foam.
That's right. But, I ended up, we were watching Jay's daughter one day, so I said, Jay, don't come pick Riley up. I'm going to come to your shop, because I got to take advantage of some of those saws, because I don't have anything here. So, went down there and cut the vertical.
Started drinking beers, then.
Yeah.
Cut the vertical.
Yeah, cut the
Cut the verticals with a miter box.
Careful.
And then, so we had big flat pancakes, 1-inch by 4-inch. Pancakes, and then I was cutting. We end up cutting those into 1x1 blocks with a bandsaw. So
it looked good.
It ended up working out good. Learned from the best. That's what Bowen said he does. So figured it can't hurt. And I just have been shoving a piece of wire through, like the wire that I make my articulated shanks with, shoving it through. Pulling it back out, wrapping it with thread, super gluing the thread, and putting it back through. So, hopefully they hold.
We're going to find out.
I gave one away at the F3T last night, so hopefully it holds. Yeah. At least long enough for someone to catch one fish.
Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah, they look good. Look like they'll work, right?
Yeah, so good I took a video. The water. Yeah,
you swam, that one looked good.
I took a video of Chad. Yeah, I swim one, just a couple days after?
Thursday or so.
Yeah. And, man, the sound it made was even cooler than the action. I felt like it just a, and just submerged perfectly.
Glug, and yeah. then Glug. Bubbles on yeah. both sides. Yeah, it was rise up. So
pretty bad. I'd like to see a green one of those, even with some, like, you know, the curlies out the back or however, just big feathers, however.
Make a giant frog.
Yeah.
That would be good. Articulate the front, throw like a four-odd out the back, throw a pair of them cone frog legs out.
Yeah.
Do a little deer hair like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like it.
That'd be the money maker.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We can handle that. We can make something like that. Actually, I was supposed to be having a friend come over tomorrow and airbrush some of these, like the musky guys do with their lures. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if that's going to happen tomorrow or not. So, we'll see. I might end up going to the Cleveland Auto Show. Take advantage of that while it's going on. We can airbrush anytime. But he said model paint, car model paint is the best paint to go over stuff like this.
Ernie said that?
Yeah.
Cool.
That was my, that's my painter.
Yeah, oh yeah, he's, yeah, all of our painter.
So,
thanks for me a lot.
Oh yeah,
I tried tying a 747 like Brad does, with the shank, a split ring, a barrel swivel, a split ring, then a hook, in the back. I ended up taking it off, taking the whole front section off and all the split rings and barrel swivels. There's too much space in between where you tie the front and where you're tying on the hook. I don't like the gap. It looks like two
Here's
different...
Here's one thing I guess it has. I can see a barrel swivel up above for line twist. But why are you going to hang a barrel swivel out the back of it? What good's that going to do?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. That's just how he ties them.
I'm just asking, what good's the barrel swivel out the back of the fly, though?
I don't know. But, like I said, I'm showing you the front and the back. And it just... It doesn't look the same with... With that much gap in between the head and the second section. So, that's just my own personal preference. If anyone has anything else to say, then that's all on them. I mean, but I know what I like.
Super, super sparse fly, though.
Yeah.
If you had a lot more bulk to it.
I ended up making that of... I thought I had lost my wire at fly tying night. So, I just made that with a little bit of wire I had laying on my fly desk. But I found it, so it's all good.
Yeah, I mean, if you did that on a bigger fly, it'd be all right.
I'm sure. But, like I said, I don't like the gap in between. And I end up tying the front half on a hook on this one. So, I don't know if I like two hooks, but just it is what it is. So, did we have anything we forgot to cover about the F3T that we have attended last night?
I mean, I kind of want to talk videos, a little more about the videos.
Some of the
videos.
Oh, yeah, we didn't even touch on those.
Yeah. Like,
really good.
Yeah, the way they were put together was awesome. Like, so showing a lot of the camaraderie for me. Like,
Let's go in order.
Yeah.
Chuck Reagan was first.
Yes.
That was a good video.
It was great. Man, that guy has some serious perseverance. Yeah. Like, he
that
goes.
That was really good cinema.
Every one of them had great cinematography.
Yeah.
Yes.
They're all shot very well.
And who's the funnier guy? You knew his name. The guy who did like the outtakes in between kind of thing.
Oh, Hank Patterson.
Yeah, Hank Patterson. Yeah. Those were funny. Like the way he said you had to put the film together.
Yeah.
And you're going to want a million drone shots. And they're all going through.
The very next film started with a drone shot.
Yeah, he goes there and breaks that guy's rod.
Yeah. That was is that, a 7-weight? Snap! I want to catch three more.
He just mic dropped the broken rod.
That was good stuff.
What was the second one? The second?
The conservation.
Second
if you
one,
have three fucks, give them.
Yeah. If you have a fuck, give it. Why don't you give two? Yeah. On the second hand, if you have three fucks, give all three of them. The second one was the guys in Alaska.
No, that was the girl and her daughter.
Yeah, I thought it was, the girl from Iceland, where they had the fishing outfitter in Greenland.
Are you sure? Because I was hoping and praying for that one to be over.
It
was good, but it was
slow.
The
third one would have been the bonefish, what have you, bonefish and permit, and the, what was that, Keys of the East?
No, that was in the second half.
That was in the second half.
That ended the first half, I thought.
No, because the guys wait, in Alaska, you know, yours, no, the guys yours. In Alaska where they did the 100 miles, that was in the first half. I thought that ended the first half.
That ended the first half, then the other one would have started off the second half.
Yeah, I like that. I like when the guy got real drunk and then he might drop the frisbee.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just the, man, to get to do that, to get that four guys you like, you know, your buddies, and to go 100 miles, which, what would you, how long do you think that took them? What, 10 days maybe?
I would say 10 days.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
plus flying in, plus flying out. So you're taking...
And you're in real wilderness, too, out there. Yeah. And that's nuts. Be a great time. They caught all kinds of different fish, too. Some salmon. What was it? Silver salmon?
Silvers.
And what were some dollies?
Some dollies.
And a lot of big rainbows. Real big ones.
On mice.
Yeah, skating mice. Ah.
They're doubling up on rainbows. That was cool.
And some of the most untouched water, you know? On our planet yet, you know, that's just
would be, it's still in America.
It makes me like, just, you know, the film made my hair stand up. It makes me, I really would love to go do that with some friends. You know, we're not big trout fishermen or anything, especially not now. You know, we're in muskie and whatever else, but that sounds like a great time.
What you talking about,
Liz? I said Mark loves trout fishing. What are you talking? Loves them things.
But then there's the lady and her daughter,
mm-hmm.
which. That was the only one that I was like, meh, come on. Let's get it over.
I just thought it was a little slow, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't the greatest setup on it.
It was great it was video.
A good concept, yeah. But not a great.
It was put together a little differently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After that was Chad Brown with his veterans and children deal. Yeah.
Or was that the Dubai one after that?
I think Dubai started the second half.
That might have been. That might have been, yeah.
But
then Dubai with a quick
that fit. Was sick.
That was really cool.
I could never, ever, ever in a million years see one of those queen fish swipe at a popper and not raise my rod tip. That fish, they showed one sequence where that fish swiped at the fly three times before it ate it on the fourth time. And they just kept their rod tip down, strip, 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 and it was on. I would have trout set. Three times before that fish ate.
Yeah, man, those fish are just swimming back and forth. I mean, even if they weren't striking at the fly, they're
they
just,
were slashing
just,
at
yeah,
it.
Yeah, back and forth, the whole time right behind it. Yeah, that would be...
Dubai.
Man, definitely have some skid marks after that day. Oh, yeah. Shit your pants a couple times.
Those are beautiful fish.
Oh, yeah.
They said they're a mackerel and a jack.
Yep.
So, and Chris Adams just said they have those in the last... Or, Australia, wherever he's from.
Alaska.
I said Alaska. But that would be cool. Those fish are disgusting. The Keys to the East? Yep. That was a good one.
Yes.
That was a really good one.
Yes, it was.
That's Steve Brown. That was the guy's name, correct?
I do believe you're right, yeah.
He was just on another podcast talking about the video. It's drawn a blank on which one it was. It might have been Fish on the Brain. But it was cool. You get to hear the backstory. And that Rankin, he started off just being a security guard for the fly fishing outfit. He slept in a hammock with a shotgun, just making sure the new pirates came. So it was pretty cool. Pretty cool to hear the backstory and then get to see the video.
Yeah.
Yeah, because in the video,
that
was
a
well-done
video.
I got the fish.
I was wrong.
He's good.
That was in the first half.
I thought so.
Because our friend said, what, there's a drug dealer running drugs, and I'm the one getting made fun of? Or fly fishing?
How long was the film itself?
It was over 2 hours with everything. Probably close to 2 hours just on the film. So when everything was done, it was like 2 hours, 45 minutes.
Well, they're rolled together.
Yeah.
It's like eight
couple
films, maybe.
Sequences.
Yeah.
We do have an elephant in the room, though, because there's one video none of us have spoke about.
Mm-mm.
The tiger or the tarpon?
Oh, both.
The tarpon.
Oh.
The tarpon,
that
was
tarpon
epic.
Was ridiculous.
Yeah.
That was the best film by far.
Yeah.
If I had one fish to chase
That's
forever,
ridiculous.
It would be the tigers. But that tarpon video was awesome.
If you can catch tarpon like that in small water that size... I'd take it any day.
Oh, up in,
any day.
Like when they're in Costa Rica, up in the rivers.
That was ridiculous.
Dude,
they were trout fishing
for
100-pound tarpon.
Like shallow water? Was that river?
They were 100 miles up a freshwater river. away from the ocean.
And catching, what, 150-pound tarpon probably, even yet?
Close to 100. Yeah,
100. It was sick.
Big ones.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, and they're jumping. They're jumping, yeah, like, man. They're jumping, like, right at the boat. Around, I mean, everywhere. Just
not mean, much bigger than the size of our river here.
Into yeah. the trees.
It's smaller.
Hmm. I'll be damned.
And you need a slow-mo back into a fast-mo, back into a slow-mo.
Nah.
For sure. That will set your video off.
And up close on the fish, bring it up to the angler's face, and then slow it down for the fish flop.
I'm making coffee. Slow my drinking coffee.
Someone putting lighters on.
Slow-mo of a hot model blowing on a hot fire.
So you witnessed all that?
It was him. It was Hank Patterson.
Okay.
Telling you how to make a fly fishing video. He's like, you don't need to go to school. If you think you want to make fly fishing videos for a living, just drop out now.
He said, if you're in the third grade and you want to make videos, just drop out. You know everything you need to know. And if you don't, I'm going to tell you right now.
If there's any kids listening to this, stay in school. We don't promote dropping out early.
That was a great show overall. Even like you said, we didn't talk about the Tigers, man. Those look like a good time as well. They hit ferociously.
And if anyone wants to learn how to strip set, that Tiger video shows you how to strip set.
That girl, she strip set into one of those Tigers, man. I'm like, and Chad looks up, she strip set way better than you, man.
Yes, she, yet to ever
yes,
see
she
you
did.
Put a strip set in yet.
Oh, trout set.
I get a few in. Hey, I get a few in.
I haven't seen one, but
yeah,
the day'll come.
Once in a while. But yeah, that was also a great video. And then there was the one we didn't talk about. I mean, you talked about it a little bit, but you know where the veterans were taking out the young kids, and they got to spend they went like 120 miles too in Alaska as well, and that's cool, man. A lot of the conservation kind of, you know, vibe that you get off all the videos is just awesome, you know, and it's informational, and it seems like when fly fishing touches a fish, or you know, that community gets around the fish, it usually goes in a better, you know, better way. Usually things progress better. You know, there's better conservation. There's people looking out for it. There's, you know, uplifts like in with Reagan or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, uplifted that little community. You know, big time, positively, like that.
Nobody wants to protect something that they don't give a shit about. If you can get people to give a shit about something, they're going to want to protect it in the end. You know what I mean? So that's...
like the trout.
Exactly.
That's exact our beef the whole way around here with all of our local areas. Because of the fact we want to make sure that we preserve what's here. And everything else being non-native species, trucked in species, is kind of just taking precedent over it all.
But they're not stocking our lower section of the river anymore, so...
No.
We'll have all native species.
Yeah.
If we're looking for a bright spot in a turd sandwich.
Yeah, because yeah. I still want stripers.
Yeah.
They'll be there.
For a while.
Yeah, they don't breed. Yeah. So they'll be there till they're not.
Pretty
valid.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
They're not stripers, they're hybrids.
Yeah. Yeah, they're
they'll be there till they're not.
They'll be the worst off.
So.
That's a good point, yeah.
But once that happens...
10 more years, hey. That's cool. Let's fish shit out of them.
Once that happens, we'll have to switch over to lake fish to get our hybrid fix.
Yeah, they're still going to keep stocking them up there.
You know, hopefully even the pike population will raise more with you know, taking a lot of the other species out, because the walleye will weed out and everything else will weed out as well.
And the big thing is the smallmouth. You want to be able to get them smallmouth and sustain a good... But the problem is they're not reducing the catch sizes or limits. That would be a benefit to it.
Who keeps smallmouths?
Oh, my gosh.
Lots of people.
Yes.
Really?
Oh,
tons. Out of our river?
Yes, tons. Oh. They right now, they're the ones that are holding the 22% higher PCB level than it should. The smallmouth hold it for some reason more than anything, probably because of the crayfish or
crayfish,
what have
that's
they.
Why.
Yeah, they're eating.
Yeah.
They hold the highest, but you won't believe how many people keep them. And you figure in that river, a 15-inch illegal, well, I don't
12-inch
know.
There.
12-inch, yeah. Okay. Well, a 15-inch fish is 4 to 5 years. You hit a 20-inch fish there, it's 8-year-old.
Yep. Think how many PCB-filled crayfish that thing's eaten.
And you know what the bad part is? Every good-sized fish I've caught there looked like it was on the verge of death. All the middle fish, like 15 inch, have all been good. But them bigger fish, 18-plus, have all looked, haven't looked good.
I've caught some 18s that have been healthy fish, but they've been in fast areas with lots of airflow.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, I haven't caught many of them. Caught probably 2 or 3. But they've all been healthy fish. So, we'll...
What does that do to them? If it's bad for us, what's it do to the fish?
Exactly. They're going to... It's like eating paint chips.
Yeah. They'll just end up like me. Come on. That's the worst thing that happens.
Sam and Chris Farley got something called.
Living in a van down by the river. So.
Do you eat paint chips as a small child?
Yeah, but if you can somehow get a sustainable something, whether it be size limit, catch limit, to get them small enough to let them grow and let the pike come back, it could be a doggone good smallmouth and pike fisher.
Be the goddamn new river.
I don't. Who knows as to what the muskies, if or do they? I mean, I kind of doubt there's any natural reproduction, but they're there.
They're there, and there's a chance.
I think there is a little bit. Depends on how far down.
The new river's a smallmouth mecca, man. We could have that in our hands.
Well, you got to remember, too, we got 12 to 15 other fisheries within an hour and a half drive.
Yeah.
If we got to let that one go for muskie, at least.
But it'll always be a smallmouth mecca, and it's always going to have those.
It's always going to have those. Good cart.
If we can get our urban deal on.
Oh, yeah. We should put that little 12-footer in there.
I know.
Throw some...
Heck yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's all been worked out in my brain.
Yes.
Throw some...
Then we can get away from those stupid rings I kept snagging all the fish up
in. We could be like the guys tarpon fishing and just chase the fish down.
Yeah.
With the outboard.
Silver Kings.
Yes.
Some bread flies?
Yes.
Throwing some bread flies.
Oh, yeah. Little unweighted merkins.
Mm-hmm.
They come right up to the surface and just whack it.
Yeah. So.
All right, that was real quiet and dead right there.
Yeah.
It was. We got anything else we want to touch on before we roll this show up?
Oh, no? You can't really fish. I haven't been going on that side.
Fish.
Yeah, I looked at my new boat for the first time since I bought it tonight. Got some big plans. Gonna see when it happens, but
it's gonna fishable be fishable right now.
What?
It's fishable right now.
Oh, it is. No, it's not because it's not registered.
Meh. Who needs that?
But other than that, it's gonna be a project boat. Like I told my wife, I bought it, gonna fix it up, and hopefully flip it in a couple years. Then just I like working on boats, like I like turning them into fishing vessels. Take a boat and turn it into a fishing tool.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun.
And Jay'll leave it in his front.
And Jay'll leave it in his driveway for 3 years. Speaking of that, I'm stealing those oars back.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was telling Chad, you don't anytime I've been in that boat with you, you don't use the oars anyway.
No.
Yeah,
Needs oars. I got trolling.
I'm going through this ripple section. Put the trolling motor up.
Let her eat, Jay.
Trolling motor's bouncing off rocks.
Oh. I never did that.
He cannot say that with a straight face.
No, I never did that. I don't know what you're talking about in the Allegheny River. Middle of summer.
He knows what rock he hit.
Yeah. Got a bitch marked. I put a pin on that on my phone.
Hey, we're not going to hit that one again.
Nope. Not next time.
So, hey, on that note, go hit up predatorflygear.com. Check out Predator Fly Gear. Nick Mayer, he got some artwork put on a skateboard. Jay brought that up to me on the way home, and I totally had forgotten about it. But, yeah, it's cool.
It was in a surfboard journal, I think. Something like that. So, hey, that's pretty cool.
Hell yeah. So
he's into about everything.
Yeah. And man, if he puts skateboards out, I'm buying one. It's getting to be warm enough. I'm going to start taking the boy back down to the skate park.
Now that it's open again.
Get a muskie on it.
It is.
Can I get a muskie and a skateboard?
I wouldn't skate a board with a muskie on it. I'd skate a board with a whitefish. Because I've never caught one.
Well, so. If you got there, hit up Alves Door Genetics. Go on his website. You can kind of pick through saddles, predator packs, what have you, what you need.
Buy chicken eggs.
Raise your own chickens from them.
Yeah.
Don was telling me last night he's gonna start raising chickens.
Chicken cool. Stinks so bad.
Joel will be down at Cabin Fever and Muskie Max in Cranberry.
What?
First week of March, second week.
Muskie Max is this weekend coming up?
No, Muskie Max is going to be the 10th. That's the one we're going to, right?
Yeah, and when's Cabin Fever?
The weekend before that.
So this weekend?
Yes.
Yeah. This weekend, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah.
And
this week coming up.
That'll be a good show. That's always a good show.
Mm-hmm.
Can I go? Yeah, you can go. Anyone can go.
Oh, you assholes never invite me anywhere, so I figured I'd raise my hand. Can I go?
You were supposed to go that's with us yesterday.
Yeah, we invited you 3 weeks ago to go yesterday.
I know.
You and Jay would have looked so good cuddling on the floor of my dad's trailer.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
We might have been...
Jay would have been Big Spoon.
I'll let you get it in.
Hey.
Lombardo asked how Jay's asshole was feeling.
I'm like a jackrabbit. My asshole felt fine. My hip now? Yeah, that feels fucking hurt. But... That was a good adventure. We had a good time.
On that note, also check out Eric's Hooks. We got new hooks coming. We got a new sponsor. They're good guys. Check out Eric's Hooks. And I think Eric's Hooks has what I got. You know what I mean?
What do you got?
I'm trying to give Mark a. I'm trying to feed Mark suggestive terms to play Sublime to go out.
Oh.
And
I didn't catch
it. No one caught what I was laying down.
I think I kind of had it, but I didn't know where you're going.
But yeah, Eric's Hooks has the J style hooks, the jig style hooks. They have hooks that look like partridge hooks, but they're way more accessible to get. So check them out.
Yeah.
All the
bench shafts. There's a couple. Neat hooks designed specifically for flies.
All the tires anymore have been tying on Arex hooks. Mm-hmm. So it's a good deal. And I think everyone should go check them out at arex.com.
We're
going
to be dabbling into with his jerkbait mania. So, Buddy Dong, who was there last night, he tied a fly for you with that stuff.
He did.
Looks sick.
It looks like a game changer, but totally different.
Mm-hmm.
It's on a magnum dragon tail and a jerkbait mania brush. And he just trimmed it, and it looks just like a tadpole. It's so sick. It's going to rip up river smallmouth.
Yep.
And he gave me a secret, super secret wiper fly. That's going to be super secret until I catch a wiper on it. Then everyone's going to see it. So, hey, on that note, anyone else have anything to say?
Who we got next week?
Next week, Brian Catterett from on Pike Bum from with Predator Fly Gear.
Okay.
So he'll be on next week, Fisher's Pike Musky kayaking. So
that'll be fun to talk to.
Yeah.
He hangs out a lot at the Fly Fishing Museum, it looks like.
Yep.
So. All right.
On that.
Catch you guys later. Oh, do we really have a commercial?
Yep.
Son of a bitch!
What kind of fucking producer are you?
Early in the morning, rising to the street. Light me up that cigarette and I'll strap shoes on my feet. Got to find the reason. Got to find a reason why my money's all gone. I got a donation.
Like, by my work? State line on, like, West Hill?
one you got, cause you might get run over or you might get shot. Never startled static, I just did it off my chest. Never had to battle with no bulletproof vest. Take a small example, take a 50 different.